I think we're recording. I think.
You think?
We are recording.
Got the laptop in front of you where the little bar is moving or it isn't.
Well, you just never know sometimes.
Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
And I've had not that much sleep.
Me neither, man. I am exhausted.
I was at a friend's house. We were playing Xbox 360 last night till 3 a.m.
So now that you were very productive.
I was sleepy for a good reason.
I went to at a festival. I volunteered at a festival to be the assistant sound guy, which was very cool, but mostly that means you're lugging very, very heavy speakers around.
Okay.
So it was fun, but I am exhausted.
I'll ask you about that afterwards. All right, launching it, and we talk about things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, TV, DVDs, some video game stuff. Mm-hmm. Richard's cats.
Sorry.
Launching into it, you emailed me a thing about Clerks 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which opens July 21st, I think, was what
yeah,
I saw.
Yeah, something
that
like
article.
That. And it was a article from the New York Times, which was, it was basically an article saying Smith has come back to what he's all about. They called Jersey Girl like a failed experiment into the mainstream, as they described it. And they're saying he's revisiting what he does best, which is, you know, the silent
irreverence was what they said.
Yeah. And but anyway, they did talk about one thing that I haven't been checking out View Askew. So I was unaware that he was recording a commentary track for people to take in their iPods into the movie theaters. And I thought, that's cute and clever, and I hadn't seen that before, and I thought it was exactly and perfectly Kevin Smith playing into the Kevin Smith fandom world.
I think it's a great idea. I don't think it's going to work that well.
I don't think it's going to work that well either. I'm saying it's more or less a perfect thing for him that is going to, that people would talk about. Oh, only Kevin Smith would do something clever like this to appease his fans and to pick up buzz outside of his fandom that you wouldn't get. I imagine one out of 50,000 people that see that movie are going to go do this. I thought it was a pretty clever thing.
I don't think he's the only one that came up with that idea. I can think of some other cool or with it directors that might try something like that.
Well, I hadn't heard what other directors have done it right now. Besides
that have done
ones.
It, none that I know of.
Well, that's
but
what
I can
saying.
See Richard Rodriguez.
I could too
doing that. I could see a few other people that are just always trying new things.
Yeah,
and so you know.
Oh, I'm not saying they could. I'm just saying it seemed to me perfectly in keeping with him. Everything about Kevin Smith, especially Kirk's, is self-referential between his other movies, his fans. Connections, and this is yet another part of the self-referential world.
And
for that
to work, you'd need like noise canceling headphones or the over-ear big Hirken, you know, the ones I'm talking about, the big black.
Or you
black
need to go on a day when nobody's there and you sit there. I've got some of those noise canceling headphones.
Which, and I still don't even know if that would work, because to me, commentaries work best when you can hear a little bit of the movie sound, the dialogue, and the music and whatever, and then hear the voices. And
either that, or you've just immediately seen the movie, you're turning around watching it, so it's fresh in your mind, so having to listen to them doesn't matter. But I totally agree. Anyway, I thought it was kind of clever.
I think it's a very cool idea. Although, you know, and I read that article too, and you know, this quote unquote consensus that, you know, Kevin Smith just does irreverence and that's it. I find that a little irritating, because you know, they completely dismiss Jersey Girl, which
I liked when I saw it. I didn't think it was a great movie, but I would have given it definitely a thumbs up.
I agree. You know, and there are parts of it that didn't work that to me felt a little too sentimental, like he was delving too much into his, you know, his sort of this is his Valentine to his family sort of thing.
Yeah.
But other than that, you're right. It wasn't that the movie didn't work. It's just that, you know, it came out after Geely and everyone was sick to death of Ben Affleck by that point. And Ben Affleck does a great job in the movie.
Yeah, and George Carlin was really good in that movie, and like basically a dramatic role. And it was, it was a great movie, or a good movie. But it's acquired this reputation of, oh, Kevin Smith can't do that kind of thing. It's like, what's up with that?
Which is too bad. I mean, there are things he shouldn't try to do, and he's always been extremely upfront with saying, I'm not a visual director. You know, look at my first few movies, and the camera is locked down.
Yeah.
There's like two moving camera shots in the movie.
And well, he did hire like that brilliant cinematographer. This right. Wasn't it Storaro or who is the guy who did Apocalypse Now? Wasn't it Vittorio Storaro or some famous
European
director.
Name?
Yeah.
Anyway, the other thing you emailed me this week was the Uwe Boll takedown SmackDown.
Was that serious? I couldn't tell if that was a legitimate offer.
I honestly couldn't tell.
What it was,
I assumed it was, and then I just assumed everyone would immediately forget about it.
What it was Uwe Boll. It was some press release put out by his new movie company where they're looking for the people that most hate Uwe Boll, who is notorious. He's the German director that has directed all these video game adaptation movies and thus earning the wrath of fanboys everywhere. I mean, absolute enmity. They hate the dude. And he's open an offer to, like, it was like the top 10 or top 4 people that could write an essay where they explained how much they hated him, and they would get to fly to Vancouver and be killed in his next movie, or what?
It
or,
sounded like they were going to arm wrestle or play video games.
They're
going to
actually fight him or something?
Play Doom against each other or something?
Oh.
That's what I thought it was, but...
It just...
I admit, I didn't carefully study the story.
That, you know, it was a complete press release, but they did point out in the press release that... Of course, they carefully omitted his most recent movie, Blood Rain, but the two other ones,
House
I don't even remember.
House of the Dead and I Can't
Yeah, and one of those other ones, they did point out that they each cost about $20 million and they raised about $120 million each. So, thus proving why somebody would hire Uwe Boll to direct
Which
a movie, theoretically. It just goes to show
anyway,
programming and films are everything. But it is funny, I mean, that the guy just, he doesn't give up, he's still there, and movie companies are literally sticking behind him and fighting for him.
Yeah, who cares about the press? It's all about the money. And if they, you know, if you make a movie for X and it pulls in X plus 100.
Yep, exactly.
Anyway, I don't have anything to add to that other than it kind of reminds
funny.
Me of last week on This Week in Tech. They were talking about Blu-ray players coming out and what some of the movies that were available for HD DVD and Blu-ray. And, they're talking about Blu-ray movies, and it was like the fifth. Was it the Fifth Element?
I don't know.
Dead
Silence.
Fifth Element, Ultraviolet, and it ended up being like of the first batch of 10, three of them happened to have Mila Jovovich in them, which I thought was really funny. They start joking around about.
I wouldn't mind seeing the Fifth Element. That's a gorgeous movie.
Early adopters, males, geeks in their 20s and 30s. Mila Jovovich.
Yeah.
And I am so that demographic. Oh, Mila!
I don't know.
Mila is nine kinds of hot.
I confess I did like the Band-Aid costume she wore in Fifth Element, but I've never been that big a fan of her. But I did like Fifth Element. Did you see the thing about Toshiba? They're losing like $250 per player on these.
I saw something about that.
It's like, wow, those things apparently they're just junk.
Well, it's, you know what happens is analysts, like stock analysts, Merrill Lynch and whatever, they look at. They put together a parts list. Like, we think in order to put this thing together, they're buying $700 worth of parts.
Yeah.
And they're selling it at $500, so they're losing $200 a unit
yep.
just to gain mind share and be the first out, which could be. And you never, but when you're doing that as an analyst, you never really know the kind of bulk agreements that are set up between these companies. You know, they did the same thing with the Xbox 360 and with the PlayStation 3. You know, really looking at the parts list saying, we think they're paying... You know, they're putting $900 worth of parts in a $600 box. But when you're talking about companies like Sony and Microsoft, they can basically say, this is what we're going to pay you because we're going to buy 5 billion of these little widgets.
Yeah.
You know,
I've heard almost nothing but good about those things. So
about the players, the HD
yeah,
DVD
just,
players?
Apparently, and I just don't get it because supposedly they've been waiting in the wings and they were going to kick in. And wow, in that year and a half when they're waiting in the wings, I'm surprised that they didn't bother tweaking and making this player perfect.
Well, it seems like they are getting some HD DVD movies out there.
Yep. Which is good. And from all accounts, when you are watching them, they knock your socks off. They're incredible.
Knock your effing socks off?
I choose not to swear, but if you choose to.
Dude, I've seen your layouts. Every time you lay something out, I've seen your filler text.
That's true. I've been in trouble for that before.
But it's interesting reading around the sort of the tech blogs and the tech websites, there's an incredible variety of opinion on this format thing. You know, it's a format war. No one's going to buy it. Or, you know, here's why you should be an early adopter of these formats and encourage them. And, oh, it's never going to happen because the studios aren't going to release any content, or they're not releasing enough content.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, the variety of opinion on these things.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I've read more than enough where they just sit down and say, oh, this is ridiculous and it won't work and it's going to die because this. I think you probably read this, a couple of the same ones I did, and I honestly don't know what to make of it. If I had the money, I'd probably be buying the one right now, even though it's a piece of crap, just because I love that stuff.
One aspect we haven't discussed is apparently the porn industry has decided to go with Blu-ray.
Really?
And the porn industry, to use your phrase, is famously sets the tech bleeding edge. Absolutely. In terms of movie production and things of that nature. They're usually out there on the bleeding edge, yeah, almost because they have to be. And then whatever they choose a year later gets filtered down.
Well, it's a thing nobody talks about, but drives everything. That when you talk about local cable company profits, it's the most profitable thing is porn. We always talk about all these porn players and this and that. The biggest porn player in North America,
Comcast.
Well, it's actually Time Warner.
Oh, okay.
And Comcast, and by extension, Comcast and others are doing
this. They did, and you're right, because I remember 60 Minutes did a story on that, and they were discussing the fact, that exact thing, that these cable companies make such enormous amounts of money through pay-per-view porn.
Yeah.
And then the companies never want to discuss it on camera because they know if they get conservative Christians and the sort of this, if they rile up this, yep, this media beast that is the conservative right, they could be in trouble.
It's one of the reasons why you,
although wouldn't it be interesting to see where the demographics of who's buying and, you know, the breakdown of, gee, I wonder if it's the conservative South buying more than
they've done
the whack
some
jobs
of,
on the West Coast.
They've done some of that, and often it does break down that way sometimes. But what they also point out is it breaks down across every spectrum. It's,
right,
it's clearly Americans are into this, and the thing is that sometimes I wonder when they're going after they change the telecommunications rules, so now if a broadcaster let slip an F word or something, they've changed the fine from $32,000 to $325,000. They just changed that last week and signed it into law. And sometimes I wonder if a lot of the companies are sort of not fighting it that much, just praying that, well, if we give into this, then they're going to let us slide on the porn and stuff. Cause to me, just having that porn stuff out there is, would seem to be much more offensive than whether Janet Jackson's breasts got shown on the Super Bowl or something. So, you know, it seems like they have a tenuous relationship that nobody's talking about.
Ridiculous.
Oh, it's insane.
I remember a bunch of us were over at a friend's house watching the Super Bowl. That was right. I think at the end of the halftime show.
Exactly was.
You know, most people were out eating in the kitchen, and there was a couple of us in the, you know, watching the end of that. And it happened, and we all just kind of go, huh. You know, we didn't back it up and watch it again. There was no, oh my goodness, was that her boobie?
Yeah.
We all just assumed that there was some sort of pasty over the nipple.
Yeah.
And who cares? And we moved on, and it suddenly, they latched onto this as this gigantic,
you should have heard,
excuse.
This. There's this one senator, this gal, I can't remember where she's from. I think it's Arizona or somewhere, and she was talking about her child.
Must have been a state senator, because I think both.
No, it was a federal.
Then Arizona.
Well, hold on. It was a federal representative somewhere. So it's either senator or representative. I can't remember her name. Anyway, she was a. You would hear her talking in testimony about how she lets her child occasionally watch, you know, something, and we thought he would enjoy watching this wholesome American event as the Super Bowl, and then she was talking, and then she's like,
it's financed by how much of that is financed by beer commercials?
I know. Well, she was excoriating the head of CBS up there and saying how you line your pockets with this with this filth, and how my child had to go to school the next day and explain how horrified he was. It was unbelievable, the sanctimonious she was.
Sanctimonious.
It was just painful. And
shocked I am to discover there's gambling in this establishment.
I'll tell you, it's funny because, you know, I got serious to listen to Howard Stern, and Howard Stern just like finally reacquired the rights to all 23,000 hours of his old show on regular radio. Mm-hmm. They're not playing those yet, but I every once in a while listen to some of my old CDs of those shows. And I'll tell you, the difference is night and day, because now they don't feel like they have to, they don't purposely swear, but they just feel comfortable. And it sounds like, wow, that's the way I talk. And then you listen to the old stuff and you realize it was enjoyable, but you realize how much a radio is a whole bunch of people holding back. And I don't mean holding back to present swearing. It just doesn't feel natural the way the new stuff does.
Yes and no, because I have been on the radio. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but I have been live talking on the air and everything. And I think it would be a lot harder when you are doing more of a Stern type show or a talk show. But when you're, I was a music DJ. When you're doing that, it's actually not as hard as you'd think. There's like a switch in your mind.
I wasn't saying hard so much because clearly they managed to do that. I'm saying the perception to me, the listener, and you're right. His show is geared towards that. But I'm just saying from my perception, I used to think, wow, when they go on to the satellite radio, I was thinking it was actually going to be a little worse, because some of the funniest bits are when they have to come up with euphemisms for certain words. But in reality, it just ended up you feeling the stifling of their creativity, and you don't feel it now. And again, that's probably mostly for a show like his, but I definitely can hardly imagine listening to local radio anymore unless they were free to be as open as this, like talk radio as well. I think that talk radio honestly would be better if people were slightly freer.
And most of the people I do know in radio will swear not off the air, not maybe a little bit more than average, yeah. But you'll be talking to them and tons of swear words are in there and you'll be like, interesting. And then they're on the air and they flip that switch and it just doesn't come out.
And I hope I can emphasize, it's not so much just the swear words. That's part of it.
I understand.
It's sort of this perception on my part of the freedom, but I may be wrong on that.
And there was a thing on The Daily Show last week where, there's across the country, there's this various movements to try and blame video games for everything.
Yeah.
And there was a representative, yep. A federal, U.S. representative was lamenting, like, my two children were playing this horrible game and the things they were doing were horrible, horrible. And they stopped the tape and Jon Stewart says, and there was nothing you could have done standing there watching your children play this. Let's see, what could you possibly have done? And it, just really hammering the point home. You're the parent. Maybe don't let them play the game. Yep. All these boxes, Xbox, they let you set parental controls.
Yep.
The Dish Network box, DirecTV, I'm sure all these cable boxes let you set in essentially the V-chip.
That's what made the broadcaster so mad. They fought the V-chip forever, but then finally said, okay, we'll do this. And the manufacturers, everybody put it in. They inserted it into the signal to make sure it works.
And nobody uses it.
So all of a sudden the federal government's saying, hey, we need to have new restrictions. They're going, no, you made us do these. We have them in there. So the cable and TV industry had to start putting ads on TV reminding parents that they have the power. It's so amazing how people get all mad about the government telling them to do stuff, and especially conservatives love to have the government telling us to do stuff, even though freely people have their power and parents have the ability to be a parent. So anyway. That's it.
The other thing I was going to, before we get completely
off topic.
Well, we've still been on topic. We're just going different things. We were talking about cable companies making lots of money off porn.
Yeah.
That's a little surprise. I mean, the part of that that's surprising to me is, Dish is pimping, $10 for co-eds, five, whatever. And you're looking at that and you're thinking, $10. You're going to need maybe 5 minutes of that.
Yeah.
You don't need 2 hours.
Yep.
And aside from that, are you having trouble finding porn on the internet?
Well, I know. And that's the funny thing about the pricing is I still think it's hard to know, but I'm still not sure how many people are comfortable with the internet. So they're used to the TV
thing. And that
thing
has to be it, because anybody that's technically inclined knows.
Yep. So in terms of pure bandwidth on cable, the thing is, I mean, you're right. If you want to watch Steven Spielberg's Munich, which is a $100 million movie, it's going to cost you $3.99. But if you want to watch Coed Fever or whatever, it's like going to be $10. And you're right, in terms of bandwidth, you're only probably, somebody's going to click it on after 5 minutes. So it's not even, you know, spitting it out that much, you know, so you're exactly right. And you wonder how much of a premium which I imagine is huge, the cable companies are charging, because they're essentially they can say, listen, porn producer, we're gonna give you good profits, but we're gonna take the lion's share because we can, because this is an icky thing. So they're probably given who knows how much, but when they put out Munich, the cable company's probably collecting $1 out of that $3 or something. Who knows what thing is? But with porn, I wouldn't be surprised if they're collecting the massive lion's share of the profits just for the right of being able to put it on their system and having to, you know, thumb their nose at it or whatever. So,
Futurama.
Oh yeah. So wow, it's official.
This has been in the works for a while, yep.
And we all knew it was coming down the pike, but it's finally official.
You know what I was just thinking? Was it Comedy Central or the Cartoon Network?
No, it's Comedy Central. And that's what blew me away, because it's been on the Cartoon Network, but Comedy Central, for I think they bought the rights for like 2 years, but Comedy Central bought the rights. And as part of a package, it was part of a package that they're going to be able to rebroadcast all the old ones and have at least 13 new ones. So,
which is great, great, great news. That is one of the canceled shows I miss the most.
And they already mentioned, it's smart, incredible.
So funny, so well done, yep, on so many levels.
And they already mentioned they've signed up Billy West and Katie Sagal and who's the other one?
John DiMaggio.
John DiMaggio. So it's like yay, yay, and yay. It's like incredible. You know it's going to be as great as it ever was.
Maurice LaMarche, they need, I'm trying to think of, Tess McNeil.
Yeah, and the gal that does the Asian gal. What's her name?
I like it. Teresa. I think it's Trish Takanawa from Family Guy.
No, I think it's Teresa something or other.
Well,
but anyway.
Tess McNeil?
No. There's
well, whatever.
Yeah, but anyway, they got a few left.
Get everybody. But it's interesting that it's 13 episodes, because they've always said it was a really expensive show to produce. And so you'd assume they wouldn't do it unless the quality level is going to be acceptable. Yeah. But that's great, and I hope they do more. And that just congratulations to everyone involved, and thank you.
Yeah. They always talk about it was the Family Guy example, but it's like, wow, that whole Family Guy example was set like 3 years ago. You're sort of surprised it would take this long, but I'm glad it did, because I think that
has more to do with, you know, Fox probably with the creative deal, because again, Matt Groening pretty much owns Futurama.
Yeah.
And Fox doesn't, whereas with Family Guy, I think they own more of that piece of the pie. And I'm speaking in generalities. I don't know the specifics, but anyway, that's extremely cool.
It's awesome. So, a million email boxes across America were filled with emails that said, good news, everybody, you know, because how else could you say anything else but that? Anyway.
Moving on. I just saw this. I did a quick check of some of the movie websites before I came over. Watchmen has a new director. Have you been following any of this?
No,
you
just
know anything
a little
about
bit.
This?
Just a little bit.
Watchmen is
that's a graphic novel, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. It was a 12-issue limited series comic book in the 80s, and it's one of the excuse me as my voice goes. It's one of the two comic book projects that is just seminal in the comic book industry, between that and Return of the Dark Knight. And it's been, you know, Watchmen has sort of been in the movie process for at least a decade, but it's really hard to film. It's not at all easy to film for a variety of reasons. And different directors have been attached, you know, Terry Gilliam, Paul Greengrass. I mean, these are incredible directors that would have done an incredible job.
Let's talk about two totally different directors. One that's known for this hyper-realism, and one that's known for a total diversion
of
the fantasy.
It's going to be really hard to squeeze into 2 hours.
Yeah.
And budget-wise, because there's some stuff towards the end, especially, that would be really although, you know, I'm making a big deal out of it, but in terms of spectacle, maybe on par with some of the spectacle CGI films that you'd see nowadays. But it's the guy, Todd Snyder, who did I'm blanking on the first thing he did, but he's in post-production on 300, which is another comic book movie.
Oh, yeah.
Adaptation of Frank Miller's graphic novel about 300 Spartans holding off the Persian army.
Peloponnesians. Well, it was the Athenians.
Anyway, they found a natural bottleneck, the Hell's Spout or something like that, where a small number of warriors held off this gigantic army. And anyway, he's in post-production on that, and I guess the movie company likes it enough that they're giving him this movie, but we'll see, because it's going to be really hard to film. But I just found that interesting.
Cool.
That the wheel keeps turning on that project, which sort of is, you probably saw this... couple articles came out talking about the budget for Superman Returns.
Yeah, the one in Entertainment Weekly
read this morning.
I've only heard about it, but they added it all up and decided it was $363 million, I think.
I don't know if it was. No, it wasn't that much, but it depends on how you count it. There's a couple things they're talking about, and the one aspect that I wasn't aware of, the pre-production costs for the previous attempts.
That's what they're talking about. Paying Nicolas Cage, all that stuff.
Well, that was Tim Burton.
Yeah.
I mean, they were using a part of a Kevin Smith script for that. Anyway, but like $25 million for the Tim Burton Nicolas Cage thing. And that was mostly for their two salaries because they were pay or play deals. And the McGee version was $20 million. And the Brett Ratner version, another $20 million. And when you add up it was like $65 million for these three attempts at this project.
Literally out the window.
You've got nothing.
Yeah.
You're bringing nothing from those versions into this new one. So
then you add up production costs, add up marketing. That was the number I'd heard.
Well, marketing wasn't... I think the Entertainment Weekly was saying they came up with like $265 million before marketing costs, and they said the film is probably going to have to make $600 million to make a profit.
Now, when they're saying that, are they including DVD sales and other stuff?
They didn't say.
Because... Because I think it probably will with DVD sales, but it's ultimately going to be a mildly profitable film, probably, unless it's just does incredible. Because at $600 million in ticket sales, it would have to be about the third biggest of all time.
Although I'd be also interested in knowing how much of the merchandising tie-ins they're getting from that, because it's not just the Got Milk stuff. There's Superman Pastoroni.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
as a big Pastoroni consumer, I'm sensitive to the.
So have you been hearing some of the reviews?
They seem pretty positive.
They seem real
I've been trying
positive.
To avoid them.
I don't want to give away details or hear details too much, but the things I've been hearing have been almost uniformly very ecstatic to very positive.
Another interesting thing, the TV campaign over the past week, they've cut some new commercials and they're very almost like music video like.
Really?
Here's basically almost like a rap soundtrack that they've cut things to. And then there's like,
maybe they're trying to get some of that McGee, get some of that, since they spent the money.
Or a rock soundtrack, but they're cut very interestingly. I've never seen another movie do that and have like, here's a rap version of the commercial. Here's a rock version of the commercial. Here's yet another version of the commercial. That's very, energetic. I just thought it was interesting. And we are set to see it Tuesday night at 10 o'clock.
Tuesday night 10 at Alderwood 7?
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Anyway,
speaking of marketing.
Although, hold on, before we... James Marsden, who played Cyclops in X-Men movies and is in this movie is Perry White's nephew or something. His comment was, although if you're going to make a global film with the widest reach that can make the most money, you're going to make the film about Superman or Jesus. Okay, so what were you going to say about marketing?
Well, in terms of, I saw Cars last night, finally. And I was talking to the person I saw it with, our buddy Mark. We both kind of agreed, maybe others disagree with this, but A, thought it was great, huge thumbs up. But to me, it was like the least essential of all Pixar movies. And that's like not necessarily, damning it. It's just that I don't know. I just sort of get into the formula totally now. So it's nothing's particularly surprising, but I still loved it. And one of the things I really liked about it was that if there was a movie that ever had opportunities for massive product placement. It was this movie because it was all about NASCAR effectively with stickers all over these cars. I mean, I can only imagine what DreamWorks and the people behind Shrek would have done with this movie. And they pointedly didn't do all of that. In fact, the few product placements are in there. When you look at the end of the movie, you realize they basically asked permission to use the name Porsche and Dodge, but they didn't necessarily highlight it. They just knew they needed cars. But things like the Goodyear blimp was the Lightyear blimp after Buzz Lightyear and other stuff. I love that. I love the fact that they clearly turned down X millions of dollars just because it would, they probably offended them, probably thought that would ruin our movie in some way.
That's a good point, and I hadn't thought of that, and that's, well done, Pixar. Yeah. And exercise restraint.
So it was great, but through a lot of the movie, I was a little bored during parts of the movie, and then towards the end, the things kick in where I get a little touched and stuff. Nowhere near as touched as I did at the end of Finding Nemo, and especially Monsters, Inc., when they open the door and you see Sully looking in there. I mean, it just devastated me, that thing. Here, just a little bit of it. And the thing I was trying to think, I think it might have to do with the fact that it's cars that they've turned into, anthropomorphized, because it just, to me, doesn't have the same effect as actual computer created people or animals. It was a car, and they did as good as it would, but it wasn't great. And for whatever reason, the eyes in this movie, where they basically, it was clear when they were trying to come up with how to design these characters, they put eyes in the windows and then created these like shade effects. But it was so clearly they probably tried the headlights and it didn't work as eyes. So they just put them in there. And it was, for the first 20 minutes, it was just distracting.
I had no problem with that.
I'm not saying it was good or bad. I'm just saying it was distracting to me.
You're having a subjective reaction.
And I was trying to figure out, why am I not getting into this the way I did with the others? And I think that was it. And it hammered home at the very end when they were showing the very amusing scene of them in the drive-in, and John Ratzenberger is seeing all of his other characters. But they were showing car versions of those characters. And I was and I was struck by how less cute they were than the real characters. The other thing that I thought was interesting was that there was a lot of times they're going for the full cars doing everything motif, but there was things in there that it was clear they were working around how you could see it. So in other words, at one point, like the lead character, Lightning McQueen, is getting his tank filled up with gas, and they show him, but they just show the gas, the gas nozzle in his car, and then he's done and he sort of kicks it off of him. But I'm trying to figure out, how did he get it in there in the first place?
It's subtle, but you see it if it's there. There was like a foot pedal that they pushed their tire on, and the gas nozzle would just angle down directly into the thing.
I missed that.
But no, you're right. In terms of how do these cars actually function in the world trying to manipulate things, there's some other things where you're like, how did they do that? They really couldn't do this, You kind of just have to let it go.
Yeah. So I would give it 4 out of 4 stars, and I would say it's right now my least favorite of them. My my favorite probably being The Incredibles for a number of reasons, and then every other one like number 2. So anyway.
Next on my list, apparently J.J. Abrams would like Matt Damon
to
play James Kirk in his.
What do you think about that?
I'm fine with it. I think it'll work.
Yeah.
And I thought, and I don't think it's a deal yet. It's just an express level of interest. And he got Shatner's permission to go after Damon like that.
And the big, is that something he had to get, or is it more metaphorical?
No, I think that was more being polite about it.
And what about Spock? Are they talking about?
Didn't hear anything about that. But I would say, how ballsy would it be for Matt Damon to do that?
Oh, that would be cool, man.
That would be so ballsy, because he's got a great movie career. He does not need to do it by any stretch of the imagination.
Yep.
And
he's got a very smart movie career.
Yes.
And he knows what he's doing, and he puts them out. And that whole Bourne series is such a great thing for him to continually keep a high profile. And, you know.
But I would be really excited about seeing that. That'd be cool.
Well, I was surprised to read it, because I thought they were all still dancing around whether Abrams is even part of Star Trek. So
me. He's producing and maybe directing, but so I think he's doing that. There was some pushback on that he was definitely directing, and it's definitely going to be this.
Well, a lot of it they were saying was that what I heard was a lot of it had to do with, well, if Mission Impossible 3 is a big success, and then, and Mission Impossible 3 hasn't been a big success, but by all accounts, he delivered the movie that should have been a success. So if it's not a success, they're not blaming Abrams. So I still haven't seen it.
Anyway, I just think it's cool.
I think it's cool too.
Next on my list is The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, the, and the only reason I bring Meryl this up, Streep thing.
Yes. Yeah. The only reason I bring this up is because I saw the trailer, the teaser, a month ago or so, and it's one of those trailers that does a scene.
I love and trailers we've like
that. We've talked about how much we love that. Yep. And it works pretty well. Essentially, the scene is the Anne Hathaway character coming in for her job interview with this fashion magazine, and Meryl Streep suddenly barreling into the office unexpectedly, and it works really well. It almost made me want to see the movie, even though I have almost zero.
Yeah, it doesn't
interest.
Seem like your thing. Well, did you see Dave Poland? He was given a review of this thing, and he was, or a semi review, and he was saying the three of these stars in this movie are unbelievably brilliant. They're unbelievably good. And then he goes and says, but then there's Anne Hathaway, and they kind of shoehorned Anne Hathaway as almost like a character in there. So it says it's this great bitchy, you know, movie. And then there's Anne Hathaway from The Princess Diaries. And she's kind of bringing that character in. He says it to him, it almost ruins what on every other level was this real highfalutin, you know, bitchy, great movie. So who knows? I hadn't had much of a experience. I didn't even know this movie was coming down. But the one thing that I noticed about it was Meryl Streep is looking high fashion. She's got this platinum blonde kind of wig in there. And I was struck by when I was watching the Prairie Home Companion last week. She was in that and she was fantastic, but she looked old and doughy. And I thought, well, Meryl Streep's kind of getting old and doughy. And then I immediately forget, oh my God, Meryl Streep, she always loses herself in a role. And if she needs to look old and doughy, she's going to look that way. I just sort of thought that's the way she's looking, because she looks really good in the trailers I saw. I mean, she looks probably to some extent her age, but she looked really good. And I don't know why, how I just assumed, oh, this is the movies you're going to see Meryl Streep from now on, old and doughy. And I don't know why I just didn't, it didn't occur to me that she was probably doing that for the role. So anyway, Meryl Streep, I mean, I'm trying to think of the movies I've seen her in when she isn't almost uniformly great. I remember when she first started doing some comedies thinking, Meryl Streep in a comedy, and she's very good in that. And I remember she even did that action movie that was so good, the River Wild, the Curtis Hanson movie.
Never saw it.
Oh, it was like great. She was like this action, you know, white water river rafting person. I'm thinking, God, Meryl Streep, talk about somebody who can literally do anything.
Next on my list, just randomly, the upcoming movie, You, Me, and Dupree.
I haven't heard about it. What's it about?
You haven't?
Well, tell me about it. Maybe I have.
Excuse me. Matt Dillon and his wife take in Owen Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Owen Wilson's like the best friend, but he's wacky, and wackiness ensues.
Is this like a Farrelly Brothers thing?
It could. Well, no, but it's that genre. Yeah. And it's, you know, Owen Wilson, he's almost like the dude.
I know.
You know, doesn't really have, you know, he's interviewing for a job. And what's your policy on Columbus Day? Not a holiday? Okay, we're going to have a problem. Thank you for your time. Goodbye. You know, and then, oh, he, you know, he's
kind of morphed into that.
I'm getting stuck in all these trailer moments I want to express. But, you know, you get the idea.
Owen Wilson is always best when he's playing Owen Wilson.
And he's playing Owen Wilson. I mean, it's really interesting how interchangeable those parts are. How he plays this weird, you know, his haircut exactly the same in every movie he's ever been in.
Yep.
You know, maybe he'll tone it down a little for the Royal Tenenbaums.
Except for Bottle Rocket.
I haven't seen.
You know,
Bottle
it's
Rocket.
Funny.
I want to.
I saw it again for the
it's
other time.
It's not part of your nearly 1,000 collection.
No, but he's got this very short military haircut, and it was basically his first movie, and it throws me every time I think back to that movie, because I realize that, oh, that's Owen Wilson, because you're so used to having that mop top, that, you know, that wavy mop top. Anyway, so there's the one movie, but he's still playing Owen Wilson in that movie. Anyway,
it's you know, and it doesn't really look that interesting. It looks kind of funny.
Owen Wilson to me is the prototypical DVD or cable guy. On few occasions I'd go out and see a movie, and never because of him.
You know, there are times when, like Wedding Crashers, which really nailed it.
I still haven't seen it. I have it on DVD.
Really?
Yeah, I have it on DVD. I just haven't got around watching it.
Really, bump that up to the top of your list. Okay. It's really quite good. You know, as Wells mentioned, there's 20 minutes in the third act that just, it's in neutral for a while. Yeah. But it's a really solid film that I was happy to have seen in the theater.
Yeah.
Which brings us just to the DVDs on the list. And before we get, I see you've got a few down there.
Yeah.
I saw my local Hollywood Video had 5 for $20.
Yeah, some of mine too, but it's
and so
it's really hard to find 5 that I haven't purchased.
So I went into, on the way home from work, I finally pulled in. Didn't even take off my motorcycle helmet.
Nice.
Because I go in, because the last time I did this, you know, it was like 3 for... I can't remember the deal.
They usually have a 3 for $20, and then.
But I find one immediately, then 5 minutes later I find the second, and then I spend the next hour trying to find the third, and I know that unless I see 5, you know, whatever the number is, immediately just to walk out and leave, because otherwise I will waste 2 hours trying to find 5 DVDs so that I can save $10, which is just patently retarded.
Well, I'm the most efficient person I know. I can blow through an entire collection very quickly.
Although you said Blockbuster is now turning them so you see the spine.
Yeah, Blockbuster.
Hollywood Video's not doing that. You got to flip through them.
Yeah.
And that's when you see, wow, the direct-to-video industry is alive and well.
Yeah, at least at the local Blockbuster at my house, they're turning them on their spine. And thank God you can just fly through them. Last night I flew through them, but I keep going because I'm waiting to see when Munich comes out on the cheap section, and they haven't had it. So I end up getting, what do I have there?
Let's read them off here. Wall.
Oh, it's some movie it's a Palestinian movie or something about wall in Israel. It's supposed to be good. I thought I'd pick it up.
My Summer of Love.
Oh, that was it's some art house British thing that I heard about a couple of years ago, or last year, that I thought.
That sounds gay. Are there naked people in it?
It's maybe, I don't know. There's hot girls in it.
Let me see here.
But it's apparently like some psychological thing.
Looks like Kirsten Dunst, Natalie Press, Emily Blunt, Patty Considine.
I don't know. I heard about it somewhere.
It's a hot looking cover.
Well, it's directed by this Polish director that I think has directed a couple of things.
They're frolicking in the water.
Well, okay. It just struck my fancy. And then
that's fine. I'm mocking some of the...
Okay.
Not mocking
and you. Then I got Land of the Dead, which I had heard very, very good things about. That's the movie that essentially, to some extent, is a spoof on the current contemporary state of affairs and the Republican Party and stuff. And that's the zombie movie where the zombies start creating their own society, and you start wondering which is worse, the zombies or the people we're opposing. So
that's
cool, and it's got a commentary track.
Okay. Kindred spirits from different worlds become entangled together one volatile summer in this passionate psychological thriller.
What a weird description for Land of the Dead.
Local girl Mona is naive, reckless, and filled with yearning for something more in life. Tamsin is spoiled and bored and trying to escape the confines of her prep school existence when she draws Mona into her fantasy world. But what started as a magical friendship soon becomes deception.
Okay, you're giving.
And
I don't know much about this movie. You're giving it away. There was another movie.
I'm reading the back.
I know,
of the
but I choose not to read them. There was a movie.
Sounds like Heavenly Creatures.
Well, it was.
To me.
Well, I think it is somewhat like that. But it was like Bubble. Thank God I didn't read the back of Bubble, where they mention like in the middle of it that it's a murder mystery, and it's like, great, that's kind of the big thing that I liked, where I didn't know where the movie was going. And there was another one the other day that I was reading that I was like, I might get this 2 thumbs up. And then they mention like halfway through the description what the thing is. I'm thinking it's bad enough when trailers do it, but when you're giving away the reveal to some extent.
I remember, like, I just borrowed from John the Recruit DVD.
The Recruit? You mean the one with, what was that? With
so it was Al Pacino.
Al Pacino and
Colin Farrell.
That's right.
And Bridget Moynihan.
Oh, yeah.
Who's delicious.
Delicious, Jesus.
which I think we actually paid to see that in the theater. Completely formulaic C+ movie, maybe a B-.
Yeah.
And yet I borrowed the DVD for reasons I can't really articulate. I just kind of felt like seeing.
You can't articulate the words Bridget Moynihan?
Okay, maybe it was just for Bridget Moynihan. Okay. But the DVD cover, the pull quote on the front, or the little slogan thing, in the CIA, nothing is what it seems, or, you know, something along those lines. You know, and when you emphasize it like that, even dumb people understand what's going to happen. Yeah. 5 minutes in, you're like, oh, okay, well, so-and-so is going to do such-and-such.
Well, it's the age-old thing of people kind of wanting to know going in, and I'm, and to some extent I'm that way too, but when I don't know going in, I get very, very excited.
Oh, and I completely agree. It's just kind of disheartening when their advertising campaign is based on telling you,
yeah,
hey, look, Darth Vader is Luke's father. Go see the movie.
Hey, have you seen this? Have you seen, the website for that, movie? I had never even heard of this movie called, Je t'aime Paris.
Nope.
It's filmed all around Paris.
One would assume.
Well, it's one of these episodic movies with all of these different, but it's like, you can't believe all the people and all the directors in this movie. It's a Coen Brothers movie. It's a movie by, well, no, that they're like probably doing a 20-minute segment. They're doing whatever. Natalie Portman's in this movie. Nick Nolte's in this movie. All these famous French directors, French actors. It's this weird international melange movie where people are doing different segments. And the trailer is only in French. And my French is so creaky that I couldn't quite get what was going on. But all of a sudden, it's like, I love French and I love this and that. And all of a sudden, there's some vampires. And it just seemed like a really weird, huge production movie. And when you look at the website, you see there's like 15 different directors attached to the movie. There's unbelievable stars attached to this movie. It apparently doesn't have an American distributor yet, but it's already playing in France, I guess. But it looked interesting. Most of the times when you do these weird experiment movies, it's just a piece of crap. It's so bizarre. But this one just looked interesting only because they were clearly the whole, whatever their dictates of the movie was, it was to use Paris as an important backdrop and film it locally. And so you got the distinct impression it's kind of a bizarre love letter to Paris, which is this incredible city. So it looked kind of interesting. I didn't know if you had seen that.
Nope.
Well, anyway, so, and parts of it are in English, parts of it are in French, and parts of it, I'm sure, in other languages. So it looked pretty cool. I'm definitely looking forward to see it.
All right. There were no emails to You Guys Rock.
Maybe that had something to do with the fact that that we hadn't had the mustard AMAs up
fine.
For 2 days.
It took me a while to post them. Whatever.
I'm just excited that for once it's not me that was being slow.
Yes, that's the difference. But GoDaddy's email system
is a piece of crap.
That sucks.
I know. We need to get our own email.
It's like I have to log into the admin function and then through the back door of the email management account. That way I can.
But I thought I set it up. I gave you didn't I send you the POP server settings? So you can just check it as a POP thing.
Well, I wanted to set it up as webmail.
Oh, okay. Well, but you can do both though. You can.
I don't like all my stuff is webmail. I have no POP.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. For a couple of different reasons, basically just because I want to be able to access all of my email from all my locations without having to worry about store it. Anyway, their email system kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But if I did get into it and there's nothing there.
But you have a Yahoo Mail account, right?
I've got numerous.
Well, but you can check pop mail at least from your Yahoo account.
I know, but then you've got unread versions and.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just, it's one of
those
things.
Yeah, you
want to
have one place where you check.
If I dedicated an hour to it, I'm sure I could set something up. I just don't want to dedicate that time. My system works just fine the way it is.
I hear you.
Anyway, youguysrock@mustardayonnaise.com is the email address.
Yes, it is.
And we will forge through the crappy interface
and we have
to get to it.
And we have the standing offer. The first email we get will be discussed on Mustard Ayonnaise. Guaranteed.
Guaranteed. That's scary. And we're skipping next week.
Yep. For what reason?
I'm getting married
you
next
are.
Week.
Congratulations.
I will not be around. Thank you very much.
I'm very excited about that.
But when we return, Superman will have opened. We'll have that, and we will have seen it.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
And I think that'll be the weekend of Pirates of the Caribbean. So we may have seen that.
I think I've decided that new Superman poster is my favorite poster of the last couple of years. The one where he's hovering over, maybe coming down over the Earth.
Okay,
that's a beautiful poster.
All right, Richard has a man crush on Brandon Routh.
I do. Is that how you pronounce it? Is it Routh or Ruth?
Who knows? I guess we'll find out shortly.
This is true, because we're going to be hearing him email or interviewed everywhere.
All right.
What's a man crush? Well, a woman crush on Kate Bosworth. I've seen some of the
previous. That's a normal crush. That's just a crush.
She looks smoking in that movie. Although she's starting to look a little too anorexic. What is the deal with these chicks getting anorexic? Anyway, we'll discuss it.
Gee, I wonder.
It's not good looking. It's not anything. I mean, anyway, we'll discuss it next issue, next edition of Mustard Annie's.
So I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
And Mila, you have 1 week left to make your move.